would you introduce yourselves, please?
Hello, you're listening to Charlie and Sean, and we're in a band called Shame.
Sean, is he permitted to introduce you?
I mean, I personally thought I was going to get a go on the mic there, but as I just play the guitar, I usually don't get the opportunity for it.
You know, the lead singers, right?
I'm okay with it, to be honest, because...
The lead singers. What is it with the lead singers in bands?
Just the ego being the center of attention.
I know, out of control.
Well, I forgive him because he's been my best friend for 10 plus years, so I'm used to it at this point. I used to be the big shot, and now he's the big shot. You know, it's the cycle of life.
The cycle of being a big shot.
Cycle of life, yeah.
You are the most exciting new British band. That would be the NME, I think. There's that Songs of Praise record. There's South London. Most of you, and I underline most of you, could barely play your instruments until a few years ago, except for one. I think I've covered it. I think we're done. There's nothing left.
All right, so the last statement isn't true. It's not that people couldn't play their instruments for a year before we started the band. It was that no one was trained to play their instruments, apart from Josh, who can play...
The jazz guy.
Yeah, Josh can play the jazz drums. But, yeah, everyone's self-taught. I can't play anything.
Charlie plays the game.
Yeah. The game. Playing the game. Okay.
Good as well.
Somebody has to.
No one's ever asked me what my name is or what I do in the band. That's still yet to happen. Still waiting. It's very Spinal Tap.
There's a good reason for that.
Yeah. I just kind of sit at the back and just do my thing, yeah.
Something that people don't know about me was I was in my mum's stomach for 10 months before I was born. So I was a month late.
I feel like he's carried over that trait into his, you know, he was late coming out. And he's late constantly to interviews, to gigs, waking up in the
morning. Yeah, we did start this late.
This is late. Yeah, this is coming.
You guys were eating.
Coming at you late right now.
Coming at you late. But don't be late tonight, because I want to go to sleep at a reasonable hour.
Go to sleep as well.
Yeah, we all want to go to sleep.
Yeah, thank you. Then right after this, let's just screw the opening bands.
Yeah.
Just show up, take over their gear. The record is now out.
Yeah,
but lots of people have made lots of a fuss way before, but there was a record before this record. There was an EP before this record, wasn't there?
We put out, like, how many singles was it, Charlie? Before
when we were 17 years old, we've been doing the band for 6 months, and we did put out like a sort of like demo. I guess you can kind of call it like an EP thing, but then we took that down, and that's never really been released to the public domain since. And yeah, we released, I think before the album came out, we would have released like five songs or something like that.
Let's start with New York, my hometown. You showed up really early. You got yourself an Airbnb near Babies All Right. But I'm more interested in the fact that you did that. You went back, you do Australia, and you do all these other gigs. Now you get to come back and kind of see the rest.
Yeah.
And you're at the very beginning of this. So, kind of interesting stuff after all the hype. Now you have to come back
it up.
And do the thing. And most bands at this moment in time that I talk to do. So, trepidation, cool, what do you think?
You know, the main point of this band is just having a laugh. And for us to be able to come over at the age of 20 and experience all these cities like LA, San Francisco, Seattle, without ever being there before in our own lives is what's so amazing about it. You know, when we toured Australia, we'd never been because, first of all, it's like 10,000 miles away. Yeah, we'd never been to the Southern Hemisphere. So I don't think we put too much pressure on ourselves. We don't try and take ourselves too seriously, and all of our live shows are primarily about entertainment, you know. And obviously when it comes to recording, that's a completely different thing. That's a completely different ballpark that I'm not going to put my foot in, because it's, you know, the shoe won't fit, because I'm not a musician or anything. But yeah, we're just enjoying ourselves. We're not, you know, we don't look towards the finish line. We just look at, you know, we look one step ahead of ourselves.
So Kiko drew up a map the other day of the route across America, and I was like, I don't even want to look at that.
We're doing 147 hours of driving, but today we drove from, we did the show last night, had a late night, and then had to wake up after about like an hour's sleep and drive from LA to San Francisco. And you just kind of look out, you know, I fell asleep for 2 hours, and when I woke up, it was just the exact same desert, blue skies, farms. Yeah. I think that's what's gonna get you down when you sort of, you know, we stopped off at a service station that was about the size of where me, you know, like the size of the area where me and Sean live and grew up, and it was just like McDonald's and Subway and KFC and like, yeah. So I think that's what's gonna break you mentally, you know. Yeah, we had a Taco Bell. It was.
Turning insecurity into strength. Now, this is what I want to talk about. Every friggin' article about you and this band is about your onstage persona. And I think that people are missing the whole point. You're purposely underselling the product.
Well, I mean, I we try to be very realistic, and we're not going to pretend that we're this character 24/7. You know, the whole idea of sort of like being punk doesn't have to be walking around spitting, throwing cigarettes at people and starting fights all the time. You know, we don't want to promote any aggression or any abuse of any kind, like, and we're not going to pretend to act differently just to live up to an interpretation someone might think that we have to have. So I think, you know, when you go on stage, you're allowed, you know, a brief moment in your day or in your week or in your month where you're allowed to feel untouchable. And it's something, you know, the music and the songs that we write is something that we have. It's something that nobody else can take away from us. So without sounding too serious, it's just because, you know, it's passionate. And
so, for example, you know, the last few minutes of the Golden Hole video where you tear a new moment for the rest of your bandmates, there half the world's going to look at it and go,
Mika Levi did that video for us, and the whole point was it was an anti-video, which is why, you know, we stopped it, and I sort of, you know, tried to write a song even though I can't play anything. And with all that stuff, you know, we always want humor to be a very important factor, because, you know, we don't just want to have one emotion as a band which can be perceived as anger. We want to display more than just one thing and one thought. And yeah, with that, it's just supposed to be funny. A lot of the stuff we do, like, you know, our song Visa Vulture, is humor in it, and, you know, the way we perform on stage as well, even though our appearances might differ in their interpretation, but, you know, we just like to have fun. We're just trying to have a laugh. But some people might not get the type of humor, but that's all right.
And yet the whole industry that you've entered is a herd mentality, you know, writing a quote good pop song. But the thing that hit me right away is I heard the lyrics. There was actually stories being told. I was able to understand it. And you know, and then the music provides, because it's not about what got into your heads or the influences, it's how it all became a stew and went from there. But as people are trying to figure out shame, what would be some good counsel for them to get them to stop?
Well, I mean, like, I think I actually, especially when it came to writing songs, was like, we never went into a song or said we want to write this type of song, or we want to write like a punk song or a pop song. It just kind of like, whatever felt good, we'd just play, and if it didn't go anywhere, then it didn't go anywhere. But pretty much that entire album is just us over the past 3 years, it's just kind of songs that just materialise. So we know, and the one thing we wanted to do was make sure that no song sounded the same. And I feel like we've kind of maybe dug ourselves in a tiny bit of a hole with that one, because coming to writing the second album stuff, it's, you know, trying to keep that up. But still, yeah, I think, you know, it's difficult because people, you know, there's so many people who go into this business with the attitude of, I want to sound like this, or I want to sound like this band, or be compared to this band. And I feel personally that's just the worst way to do it, because you don't want to sound like your influences, like, you know, too much, because then it's just like, music is already derivative enough as it is. So
the second you try, you know, to sound like your influences, you fail.
Yeah, exactly.
But we're not trying to, I think as well, we're not trying to force anyone to get it. And, like, you know, like Sean said, we don't really get it ourselves. You know, we're not, you know, if you like our music and you like our show, then great. And if you don't, then it doesn't matter. Like, we're not going to take offense to it, and neither should you. You know, and I don't think we sort of like analyze or to sort of do anything that we're doing, you know, that we're, the songs that we write or the way we perform too heavily. And now we're sort of like confronted with it because of, you know, the interviews that we do, and we're, you know, in our free therapy sessions. But I think the main, you know, what Sean said was, you know, when we have and always and still have, you know, we did and still have the mentality that we're doing this for ourselves, and we're not doing it, you know, we're not writing a song for anyone else apart from us.
Getting it right before you're signed. How did you know that you had it right enough? And again, in a situation where hype takes over really, really fast in today's world, and the, quote, vultures, but not necessarily the visa vultures, but the vultures of the lovely industry. Who signed you in the UK? I mean, I know who you're on here, but how did that go down?
Well, I think, like, initially when we first started, around about the time when we started putting on our own nights at the Windmill, I think the initial thing of hype built up. And it was, I mean, we just kind of found it hilarious, to be honest, more than anything. Like, because we've been around in a place.
Hey, babe, listen,
but like, we've been in that.
I work with those people every day.
We'd been in that, the Queen's Heads, like, and it was full of kind of washed people who'd been chewed up and spat out by the music industry. And we used to get, you know, we'd play these shows at the Women, we'd get, like, I'm going to say, like, 50 emails from, like, the weirdest record, like, labels you wouldn't even, like, something like Ministry of Sound or something like that. But our thing was, like, with what we've done with everything, with writing songs, is we never, ever wanted to rush anything, you know, like, we weren't going to, you know, rush putting out an album because someone was telling us we needed to put out an album then, or, you know, say, oh, you're gonna have to wait to put out an album because you need to write more songs. And like, there were so many of these labels, you basically kind of said this stuff to us, you kind of like tried to get us do stuff prematurely, and we just kind of waited, to be honest. And then Dead Oceans came along, who signed us in the UK and America. And
how did you know they were the right ones? What did they say that you said, okay, this is where we want to be? Because you could have been on Virgin, and you could have been on Sony, and you could have been on, you know, 4AD, I'm sure they all came knocking at your door, or a lot of them did.
You know, our door wasn't that hassled. From the beginning of the band, we knew we wanted to be with an independent record label. And with Dead Oceans, you know, when, you know, Adam Nealon was the guy who's the A&R who signed us. Adam, you know, he'd been coming to our gigs for ages, and I think what was so exciting was that they seemed refreshing and new in London particular, because obviously they started in Bloomington, Indiana, and I think it was as well when we saw their roster of all the bands that they had on there, who were all, you know, massive fans of, like, you know, Japanese Breakfast and Bon Iver and Alex Cameron and, you know, the Preoccupations, who were formerly Viet Cong, and sort of like the list goes on. Everyone on that roster, we all, like, you know, Slow Dive, we all massively, like, respect and enjoy their music, and there's almost like an eclectic taste to the label as well. Because obviously it's a branch of Secretly Canadian, but in terms of, like, under the whole bracket, all of the different bands and individual artists who were on it just seemed really attractive. And also, we didn't want to be, you know, we knew we were primarily a live band, and we didn't want to be confined to just Europe. We were always excited about the idea of going to America, even if it might, you know, be the end of us. At least it'll be, you know, at least it might be a good chapter.
A lot of the UK labels we'd spoken to, when it comes to, you know, trying to get funding or money, whatever, to come, obviously, because it's not cheap to tour the US, like, a lot of these English labels, they don't see the merit in their bands coming over to the States anymore. But, like, obviously, Dead Oceans being an American-based record label, you know, their attitude from the get-go was, like, get to the States as soon as possible and tour till you die. And we were like, that sounds good, you know.
We're the die.
The makers are, we're the makers of our own ending, you know. Yeah.
I like that.
And the next one will be, sorry, it's not happening.
Number three, we toured till we're dead.
Exactly.
The producers and the sound. Let's go into the sound, because nobody ever asks you. Everybody kind of tells you what your sound is. When you sit down and go, yeah, okay, this could be one of our songs, and this relates to making the record and sequencing and the way it was produced, what are the filters?
I think with our song, we've always just kind of known. It's never been like we've sat down, it's like where, that's why it takes us so long to write songs, because there's always that moment when we're jamming on, like, an idea, and it all kind of comes together, like, really naturally, kind of out of nowhere, you know. And I think that's when we know that a song's good, you know. Because there's so many times when you try and write a song and you're kind of jamming it out and someone's not into it, and it kind of just eventually just collapses into nothing. But pretty much every one of those songs is kind of like, kind of like a eureka moment where we kind of just played, like someone would just play it, someone would play something else over it, and we were like, oh, like that's pretty good.
I think the main thing is that everybody in the room has to like it, and everybody has to be there when we write it. And you know, the album was done over a period of 3 years, from when we were 17 to 20. And so over that period of time, you know, One Rizzler, which was our last release, was the first song we ever wrote when we were 16 and 17. And I think that's quite different to the last song we wrote before we recorded the album, which was Dust on Trial. And yeah, I mean, it's just been over a period of time. Like we, like Sean said, we didn't rush anything. That's why we went through seven or eight producers before we met Dan Foe and Nathan Boddy, who did the album. We didn't go in with that idea. To be honest, when we started the band, we didn't know anything. We didn't know anything about the music industry or about, you know, producers or this whole sort of world. Yeah, exactly. Never thought we'd get this far, kind of thing. So every step is as much of a surprise to us as it is to anyone else. And with Dan and Nate, you know, all the other producers, you know, they're all talented in their own respect, but wanted to record us as a live band, like treating it as in like sort of a punk band from the 70s, and how the Damned, and we started off recording it all live. Turn it up loud. And we met Dan and Nathan, and they kind of came in with a completely different approach, where they were massively inspired by Martin Hannett, and they were both from an electronic background. And you know, when we did the Lick and Goldhole with them, that was when it, you know, we could tell it sort of clicked. You know, like with Nathan and Dan, you know, they call themselves Vibes and Logic. Like Dan's Vibes and Nathan is Logic. And Nathan was the one who spent, you know, all the time with the band, working with Sean Gnocchi, working out all the stuff when we were recording the album. And Dan did all of my vocals with me. And it was very, you know, like back and forth chat, like after we did each take. And I think they're people we just immediately clicked with, they're people we knew we wanted to spend a lot of time with. And they approached it in a manner of like, when we recorded the drums, it was recorded, each drum was recorded individually, and the rest of the kit was rubber, so that they could really, you know, not let anything bleed in. And you know, we were with Sean Gnocchi, who, like, I'll let Sean talk about it, because obviously it's like guitar stuff. So,
well, like,
talk about guitar, I think, stuff.
I don't know if I want to, but I think the main thing you need when it comes to, like, someone producing anything is, I think, by and large, like, trust. Because obviously you're spending this money, you're in this place, and you've got this one, you know, you've got these 10 days to do. If you don't knock out these tracks in 10 days, then, you know, And so I think from the singles especially, they gave us like a certain level of trust, where like I knew that even if initially if I didn't necessarily agree with the way they were doing it, I trusted them to know better than I did that, you know, like, especially if a lot of guitar stuff, like I'm usually not that into using a lot of pedals or a lot of effects. Or, you know, I just like my one guitar, but this, obviously the guy who produced it, Sean Gnocchi, like brought like a truckload of pedals and amps,
lots
and
of toys to play with.
Lots of toys to play with, yeah. And he'd just say, just listen, just like try this. I know you don't think it initially sounds good, and I know he did the same with everyone else. And we kind of thought, oh, I don't really like this, but I'm gonna try it anyway. And then I don't know. I think, you know, by and large, like that record is a lot of him on there as well, and the producers as well. Like it wouldn't sound anywhere, you know. We don't know next to anything about producing a record or how to get a good guitar sound or drum sound, so, but no, it was,
not your job, man.
But it was a really amazing experience, very therapeutic, out in the countryside in Wales.
If you're passionate about it, you stay healthy and you'll never retire. If it's work, it's over.
The line that sums it up the best is when, you know, the most famous split up and sort of implosion was The Clash when they were touring America. And Mick Jones, you know, a year after The Clash broke up, the journalist said, you know, what happened? And he just said, well, you know, we toured every week and we played every show and we, you know, did as many albums as we could. And he said, if only we'd have taken a holiday. And that's the one line. So we try and give ourselves a break now and then. But, you know, this is the beginning. Like, you know, you're right.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And here's what it is. It's two of your songs as the bread on the outside. And then you get to pick anything you want to play in between. There are no rules.